Hello, you're listening to Me and My Brain, and I'm your host, Emma Lloyd. Every week we have important conversations about mental health and mental illness to challenge misconceptions, break down stigma, and give visibility and a voice to people who've experienced mental illness firsthand. We'll be featuring a variety of ideas about treatment and survival strategies, some you may have heard of, and others might be new. If you're interested in trying any of these, please talk to an appropriate health professional before stopping or changing any aspect of your own treatment. Thank you for listening to Me and My Brain. Now let's get on with the show. Hi everybody, welcome back to Me and My Brain. It's Emma here, and before I get started today, I just wanted to say a quick thank you to everybody that's commented, reviewed, subscribed, or interacted in some other way with the podcast on social media. It's lovely to know that I'm reaching people that are finding this relevant and useful and interesting. So yes, thank you. And if you haven't already subscribed or left a review, then please feel free to do so. You can do that on iTunes or wherever you listen to your podcasts. So today I'm going to be talking about fear and anxiety, which are kind of linked but not the same, and also about what it feels like when you've been living in a state of fear and anxiety for a really long time and you decide it's time to step out of your comfort zone. This is a subject which is very close to my heart, because last year, while I was going through a very severe bout of depression and anxiety, as I talked about in the first podcast, my world got really, really small. My world didn't go much bigger, really, than from like the sofa, the bathroom, the bedroom. I wasn't doing a great deal. I was very rarely leaving the house. My social life was virtually nil. Luckily, I've got great friends who would invite me out to things. But very often at the last minute, I would just panic and just say, no, I'm not going out. So my world had really got tiny. And whilst that felt safe, and safe is good. Safe is always good, especially when, you know, you've got depression and anxiety. While it was safe, it was also very isolating. And I knew that I was getting very lonely. I was unhappy. I really enjoy my me time, don't get me wrong. I really, really like having time where I can be on my own, where I can read, where I can create, and sometimes just think. But it was so difficult because I just felt very, very alone. Things like social media are great if you're stuck in the house, but I also think they can become a bit of a crutch, and you can kind of feel like you've got a life when actually you're just living it vicariously, looking at other people's pictures or statuses, which is not healthy at all. And it felt like it was a spiral, really. The less I did, the less I was able to do, the less I wanted to do, the less I wanted to do, the less I did it, and so on. Anyway, towards the end of last year, I started thinking that it was time that I did something. I was feeling a little bit better, although not completely recovered. I had enough energy and enough motivation to find something to do. So my first steps were to look for some sort of voluntary positions that I could do, because I figured this was a good way to learn new skills, meet people, and just get myself out of the house, really. I was also really keen to give something back to my community. You know, I feel like community is really, really important. And I wanted to do something positive for people in my area. So I applied for a couple of voluntary jobs. One of them was an admin job for the Red Cross, I think, and the other was a kind of mentorship role for people with disabilities that were job hunting. And I figured I was pretty well qualified for both of them, and sent my forms off and then heard nothing back for ages. And I got really disheartened because it had taken me quite a lot of effort, mental effort and emotional effort to do this. And then I didn't get any responses from either of them for weeks. And then within a week, I got a message from the Red Cross saying that they weren't providing the service that they wanted the volunteers for anymore. And the same happened with the disability mentor job as well. The charity that provided the service has actually decided to completely pull out of my area. So that was a bit of a blow, really. And I think when you're in the throes of a depressive episode, it can be really easy to take that kind of thing personally. Even though my rational brain could say, well, these are obviously decisions that have been made, you know, at a corporate level, whatever. There was still a feeling that this was just more proof from the universe that I was in some way flawed, wrong, whatever. So that was a bit of a blow. And at the point, I really did feel like that was what my life was going to be forever, that I'd just keep trying to do things and they'd fail for some reason. So that was difficult. Anyway, as I've talked about before, after Christmas, I had another tweak with my medication regime, and very quickly I started to feel really, really better. And yeah, it was like, as soon as I acknowledged that I was feeling better, more opportunities started appearing. And I don't want to sound completely woo-woo and mystical about this, because whilst I believe in putting your intentions out there, I always think that they've got to be followed up with hard work. I don't think that, you know, like Noel Edmonds says, you can make a cosmic shopping list and then riches and sex appeal and everything else will come flowing to you. I really do believe that if you want something, you need to work for it. And one of my favourite quotes, in fact, is the harder I work, the luckier I am. But nevertheless, opportunities started appearing and I felt ready to start saying yes to them. I can be quite rash sometimes. I either really, really overthink things or I dive in head first. So I just started saying yes to things, really. And it wasn't easy, because as soon as I'd signed up for something, I'd then think, oh my God, I've just done this. I'm scared. I'm panicking. I don't want to do this. What's a plausible excuse that I can create to now get out of this situation? Luckily, I decided to stay with it and stick in there and do the things. So the first thing that I signed up for was to take part in a community film project. Now, at the time, I wasn't really sure what my role would be in this. They were looking for people to act, direct, write, stage management, all that kind of thing. And I just figured I'd go along and maybe do a little bit of writing or something low-key, because I didn't really feel like I was at that stage when I was going to put myself right out there. Anyway, I went along to the first meeting and the whole thing was amazing. The film has been funded by the Iris Prize Community Outreach Project. Now, the Iris Prize is one of the biggest short film prizes in the world, and they have a big festival in Cardiff every year. And our group, Aberration, were able to get some funding for a professional film crew to come and film our film and also provide mentorship in the writing and production process. So we met a few times and we got together the idea for our film, and somehow I ended up with the part of, well, the character's called the Power Tool Personage, but I realise that doesn't give a lot away. But my part was basically, I'm a kind of magical superhero person that facilitates other people's dreams. So although it was an important role, it wasn't massive and there weren't loads of lines to learn, which I was really nervous about. But I did have a fantastic costume and I also had a fantastic time making the film. We had, I think, 12 hours one Saturday a few months ago where we all got together in an old theatre in town and basically made a film. We'll be premiering it in a couple of weeks and I'm really excited. And that seems such a long way from the point where I was desperately looking at my Google Calendar trying to think of good excuses not to go along to the first meeting. It was scary, I can't deny that. I think the day before we filmed, I was having complete breakdowns and just really, really panicking. I got it into my head that I was too old, too fat, too stupid, too ugly to do this role, which you know, again, rational head tells me that that's all a load of rubbish and that there's absolutely no reason why I shouldn't do those things. But anxiety, fear, brain was kicking in big style. And yet, I don't know, it's interesting because when I was a kid, I used to do a lot of acting. I used to go to drama clubs, school plays, that kind of thing. And doing this project really kind of kindled in me that sense of reconnecting with all the dreams that I had when I was a kid, which was quite exciting, really, because since then, I've been thinking a lot more creatively. I think I've had a lot more confidence in my creative abilities. Doing this podcast again is something that was brewing around about the same time as I was starting to sort of flex my creative muscles again. So yeah, I did it. I was in a film. When it's out, I'll put a link in the show notes so that you can go and have a look, and maybe you'll enjoy it too. I hope so. Right about the same time that I was doing the film, I was also trying to plan with my partner and my friend an activity weekend in North Wales to celebrate our recent birthdays. The original plan had been to go to the site of the biggest zip wire in the world. I think it's the biggest or maybe the fastest. Anyway, it's a huge, great big zip wire that goes in the mountains in North Wales. And I knew that that wasn't something that I really wanted to do. And we kind of agreed that if we went, then I would stand at the side and hold Leo and Kerry's jumpers while they went and threw themselves off mountains on wires. But then the more we researched, we realised there were other things that we could do there. And one of those was Bounce Below, which is it's a series of caves that have got giant trampoline nets stretched across them in multiple layers with slides connecting them, disco lighting, music, and it's just a kind of giant underground bounce fest. And the other thing that we decided to do was Zipworld Caverns, which is a series of small zip wires running through caverns. Some of them you're like up to 30 meters high in the air, and it's like an obstacle course with zip wires. And then we found out that in a very, very nearby location, there was also an outdoor forest roller coaster. So we booked up for the three events and booked a hotel and decided that that's what we were going to do to celebrate our birthdays. So a few weeks ago, that weekend loomed, and I can't deny I was absolutely terrified. Years ago, I went to Butlins with my son on holiday, and they had a variety of, in fairness, quite aged fairground rides and those things that spin around and go up and down and, I don't know, seem to have been designed to induce nausea. But I went on some of them with my son, and he was about six at the time. And when we got off, he said, "Mum, did you realise that you spent the whole of that ride shouting, 'I'm going to fall off and die'?" So that kind of sums up me and dangerous things, really, or dangerous things that are meant to be fun, because I think, you know, hopefully a different sense of self-preservation kicks in if you're in real danger. But when it comes to activities that are designed for thrill seekers and daredevils, no, I'd rather stand at the side and hold your jumper. Now, as you may know, I'm not the world's fittest, most active person. I live with arthritis and spinal degeneration, and I actually had a hip replacement a few years ago related to childhood problems. So I'm not a natural athlete, and doing physical things like that really scares me because I don't want to fall off and injure myself. I don't want to be the one that can't do it. I think I'm still scarred by memories of cross country at school where I was always the fat one at the back. So the idea of being the fat one at the back is just horrible. But we did it. I'll tell you right now, I did that thing. I was completely pumped up on coffee, painkillers and rescue remedy. And we did it. It was quite incredible. Now, to begin with, there was a training course of 10 kind of quite small zip wires that probably don't go more than about 30 feet up, something like that. So I figured to myself, well, I'll do the training course, and if I don't like it, then I can drop out then, and that's not a problem. What I didn't realise was that actually you had to pass the training course before they'd even let you go in the main caverns. And we did the training setup, and I passed. So after I passed, I thought, well, if they think I'm good enough to do this, then maybe I am good enough to do it. So off we went. I've got to say, the instruction we were given was incredible. It was really, really thorough and very cleverly done, so that each kind of like piece of equipment that we had that clipped on and off the zip wires and our harnesses and everything, we knew exactly what they were for and we knew what we were doing. And the equipment itself was very clever because it had two clips on it and you could only ever remove one at a time. So even if you fell while you were unclipping one, you'd still be attached to the other cable, which was reassuring, obviously. So I think it took us about 3 hours to do all of that. And again, I surprised myself. I didn't even really feel scared while we were doing it, which was, I think, perhaps the biggest shock, in that I was kind of anxious waiting for the fear to kick in, but it never did. And after a while, I pretty much forgot about it and just got on with it. The worst bit for me was going across a rope bridge, one of the ones that's like triangular from a cross section, with one rope at the bottom and then handle rails on the sides. And that was horrible because the whole structure was shaking. But the rest of the time, I was pretty happy. And in fact, when we got to points on the course when it was time to zip wire again, I was actually really, really excited and had a great time. And it was hard, I won't deny that. I've still got some of the bruises, and I think it's about 3 weeks now since we came back. I've still got big bruises on my legs, and I did actually have completely perfect circular bruises on my knees from landing on the crash mats, which are those kind of like mesh, sort of plastic mesh things. And yeah, they gave me perfect circles bruises on my knees, but they've gone now. But it was amazing, and I came out of it thinking, well, if I can do that, what else can I do? Which sounds really cheesy, but I think when you've spent a year stuck in the house, convinced that you're no good for anything, and apparently getting signs from the universe or the world or God or whatever you want to call it, but when you're starting to absorb kind of signs that maybe nobody else wants you or thinks you're worthwhile either, then it can be really hard to get to that place where you feel capable. So yeah, zip lining, do it. We've actually found that there's another course run by the same people that's zip lining through a forest. So fingers crossed, hopefully at some point I will go and do that. And if I do it, I'll be looking forward to it with loads of anticipation, rather than feeling like I was under duress and feeling like I was under pressure because, you know, our trip was, it was a gift for me. It was a present from my partner and my friends. So yeah. I'm excited. This is strange for me to feel excited about doing a dangerous physical thing. I don't feel like I really know who that person is, but I'm quite enjoying getting to know her. So the next day, we stayed in a hotel, we went out for some lovely food, and then the next day we were booked to go on the Forest Coaster. Now, the Forest Coaster is an outdoor roller coaster that goes through a forest on tracks. You're kind of hauled up to the top of the hill in your little car, and then at the top you zoom down this curvy, windy tracks through the forest. And to be honest, I wasn't scared about doing it because I figured all I had to do was sit and enjoy the trees. I'm not a huge fan of going at speed, but I figured that, you know, we'd been completely safe on the course that we were on the day before, so I had nothing to worry about in that respect. And yeah, we got to the top, this car started going, and I was absolutely terrified. It was a horrible experience. you know, the cars were very well made. The whole place is immaculately maintained, so there was absolutely nothing to worry about. I'd watched other people coming down and they seemed like they were having a great time, like older people. There were some people there with disabilities that were having a whale of a time. There were even small children sitting between their parents' legs, all of them having a grand time. So I was kind of a bit shocked, really, when my car started moving downhill and I was absolutely, I don't think terrified is even the right word. It was like a combination of anxiety, fear, horror, utter regret, and the dreadful knowledge that I still had like another 450 metres to go downhill in this car held only by a seatbelt, you know, like a car seatbelt. That was the safety equipment for that. Luckily, the cars had brakes, so I used mine liberally on my downward descent, which was probably not much fun for the people behind me, because I think I probably held up a load of people because I was going so slowly. Which was kind of counterintuitive, I guess. Perhaps if I'd let the brakes go, the whole thing would have been over quicker, rather than thinking I'm 30 feet up in the air, held in by a seatbelt in a really fast vehicle. But yeah, logic is not my strong suit when I'm feeling afraid of things. Anyway, we got to the bottom and I knew straight away that I wasn't going to go again. We had paid for, I think, 3 goes each, and Leo and Kerry were quite happy going back for more goes, but no, there was no way that I was going to do that. Not at all. And I think the great thing about that is that I felt totally comfortable saying, guys, go and have a great time, but I'm going to stand here and take pictures of you, because I tried it, which was fair enough, and I really didn't like it, and I was starting to feel quite upset and quite emotional, really, just because, I don't know, the whole experience was just, my body was in proper flight mode. And in fact, I did record a little bit while I was there, just after I came off my terrible, terrible ride. And you can hear that now. Okay, I'm talking about fear. I've just been on a forest roller coaster. I don't know how high up it was or how far we've come down. You can probably hear people shrieking with joy in the background. I wasn't one of those people. It was too fast. I was only held in by a seat belt, and I'm still absolutely shaking all over. I feel sick. My legs are shaking. I'm quite amazed, because yesterday I did loads of zip lining in the caverns and I was fine, and I absolutely did it. But this, the fear was just incredible. Oh my God, I'm not doing it again. Leo and Kerry are going to go and have another couple of goes, but I'm not. I don't feel like I've let myself down, because I had a go, but I think I had the brakes on for the entire time. I didn't feel safe at all. Yeah, fear. Sometimes it comes when you least expect it, and sometimes it doesn't come when you're anticipating it. But right now, I can't think of anything worse right now. I was just convinced I was going to fall off and die at all times. So yes, that's the voice of fear. I think it's interesting as well that while I'm thinking about these activities and these things that I've done, that I've really opened out my world this year, they've very much been with other people. We went to North Wales in a group of three, me, my partner and my friend, and the film was made. There was a group of about 12 of us who were all working collaboratively together, and on both occasions there was very much a sense of a team. The other thing that I wanted to talk about was something that I very much did on my own, and I think that added an extra dimension of fear to the whole situation. So, a couple of weeks ago, I went away on my own for 2 nights to a beautiful venue in Brecon for the Compassionate Mental Health Gathering. Now, the Compassionate Mental Health team have organised several of these gatherings in the past, and they are not exactly conferences or conventions, but more of a gathering. And there were workshops and talks and things like that, but the emphasis was very much on things being experiential rather than just sitting listening. So there were activities and exercises, there was Qigong, mindful walking, and all of this took place in a beautiful country house, which is beautiful, really, in the middle of rolling hills on the edge of the Brecon Beacons. And all the food there is cooked by an award-winning chef, and it's all vegetarian and vegan food. So it was a really, really lovely place to be. But I was absolutely terrified of going on my own. When this event popped up on my Facebook maybe 2 or 3 months ago, I thought, oh yeah, that sounds great. That sounds like my cup of tea. And I signed up for it, and I actually applied for a bursary place because they offer sponsored places for people with lived experience of mental illness. So I applied for this bursary place and was awarded one. And it all just seemed a really long way away for ages, really. I didn't think about it much other than I'd pop the dates on my calendar, and it suddenly was looming there, like it's happening in 3 days' time. And I went from being really, really excited to very, very worried. One of my biggest worries was about not fitting in. And I think actually that's probably one of my biggest anxieties in life anyway, is that I'm some sort of misfit and that I don't fit in. But within the mental health field, I've always felt a bit like I'm neither fish nor fowl, because whilst I've got lived experience of living with bipolar, I'm also an ex-mental health nurse. And it's always kind of felt to me like maybe I was a bit too mad to be in the mental health professional side, but also a bit too health professionally to be in, you know, the people with lived experience gang. There's always been that kind of friction between the two, which is not surprising, really, if you think about some of the stories that are around nowadays about how mental health services have failed people. You know, I think historically there's been a bit of a them and us culture, which has caused stigma and divides. And yeah, that was something that quite concerned me. You know, I felt that I've experienced stigma as a mental health professional being unwell, which is something I talked about in the first podcast. But I was a bit worried that I wasn't really going to find a place where I felt comfortable, I guess, amongst all these people who were a mixture of health professionals, people with lived experience, families and carers, people who work alongside people with mental health problems. So there was a big mixture of people, and I was worried that, you know, I wouldn't fit into any of the gangs. I was also worried about the whole idea of having to talk to people. Would I know what to say? Would I say the right things? Would I just come across as a bit ridiculous? Would I start telling embarrassing stories about myself just because I know these make people laugh but then make me look a bit foolish? That was a worry. And also I was worried, I think, about either coming across as too needy or too standoffish. I think when I'm feeling shy and anxious, then I will kind of take a step kind of outside the group and maybe just observe for a while. But I'm also aware that sometimes that can make me look a bit rude or a bit nosy. And I guess at the heart of all this really was that I just wanted to go somewhere where I didn't know anybody and kind of feel accepted and liked. Luckily, within about half an hour of arriving, I started chatting to people and started making friends. I did make meet some really, really great people there. And one of them, I kind of just sat and watched really, because she'd go up to people and she'd say, "Hi, I haven't met you yet. Can we have a chat? Can I say hello? My name's so-and-so." And it was really inspiring to watch that, you know, that people could do that, that was allowed, and that nobody kind of ran away in shock saying, "Oh, go away, leave me alone, I don't want to talk to you." This really simple skill of saying, "Hi, my name's so-and-so, I haven't met you yet," that was actually a really valid way of connecting with people. So that was something I really took away from it, really, was that, you know, sometimes all you've got to do is just say hello. One of the things that I did notice was that I think I spent a lot more time listening than I did talking. And as someone who tends to babble when they're anxious, this was something that I really enjoyed practicing, actually just keeping quiet, holding space, and creating like a container for whoever I was talking to speak vulnerably and honestly and authentically. And that was really one of the themes of the whole gathering, was about allowing people to be authentic. So I just kind of took the bull by the horns, really, and let myself talk about my experiences and let people know that mental health professionals are not infallible when it comes to mental health problems, and that as yet there is very, very limited support for them, which worries me. And I think a lot of people were shocked about, especially people perhaps who've been service users in mental health services, they didn't realise that mental health professionals themselves don't always get the support they need when they're suffering from mental distress. Something else I was really proud of about myself was that I felt really comfortable just using my boundaries, really, and using my words. And there were a few times when I just felt completely overwhelmed from being in a room with 150 people and lots of chatting, lots of sharing, lots of really kind of deep personal stuff going on. And I felt really comfortable saying to my friends that I'd made, "Look, I'm going to go for a walk, I'm going to go for a lie down, I'm just going to go and sit quietly somewhere because I'm all peopled out and I kind of need to recharge my batteries." I'm kind of loath to say that I've had like a massive epiphany since I came back, because I don't think I have. I think it's been more of like a slow drip feed of absorbing ideas and you know, new concepts. But since I've come back, I've noticed myself feeling a lot more positive and really quite proud of myself, and maybe a lot more peaceful as well. I don't know. I'm not sure if it was going to the mental health gathering or if it's been more of a cumulative effect of, you know, all the things that I've done this year so far. But it is really, really lovely to be in a place where I'm feeling really comfortable with myself and also able to kind of process things in a rational way without the horrible overthinking, hypervigilant, safety conscious side of my personality kind of sticking their oar in and just scuppering all the ideas I have at the first hurdle. I don't want to overanalyze things too much, actually, because I think sometimes you can kind of take the magic out of things when you do that. But I did sit down earlier and I did try to think hard about, you know, if there's any kind of takeaways from what I've been up to this year so far in terms of conquering fear and maybe kicking anxiety to the curb. So, here are my takeaways. The first one is that basically you're okay as you are. Now, this sounds really obvious, but I think when I was unwell, I spent an awful lot of time reminding myself of all my failures, all the things that I hadn't achieved, all the things that I wasn't, all the people that I didn't look like. And I think certainly doing the film kind of made me realise that, you know, I may not be Jennifer Lawrence, and that's absolutely fine. You know, I'm me, and nobody else could have played my part the way that I played it. I haven't seen the film yet, so I don't know if that's going to be fantastic or dreadful. But nevertheless, I did it, and I did it my way, and I'm starting to sound like a bad song now. But yeah, I think if you can let go of the expectations that you have for yourself, because sometimes these are really weird expectations, and sometimes they're other people's stories, or they're things that other people want for you that are not necessarily what you want for yourself. I think if you can let go of those weird expectations and unhelpful stories and just accept that what you've got is what there is right now in this second, then it's really helpful. You know, if you want to change, then by all means change, but do it because you want to and because that's what feels right for you, not because you need to measure up to somebody else, celebrity, fiction, imagined, your neighbour, whoever. I think accepting who you are and what you've got and where you are is really, really useful in terms of finding some kind of sense of peace, really. And maybe if you live with anxiety or fear, that will give you enough space to actually start enjoying yourself a little bit. Something else that I've kind of realised from the past few months, and that's about sticking with facts. Now, if you've done any kind of CBT, cognitive behavioural therapy, then you'll understand that there's a lot of value in actually concentrating on what's true, what's factual, and what the evidence is. Now, for me, this really became apparent when we were doing the training instruction for the Zip World Caverns course. And all my kind of you're going to fall off and die feelings were completely ameliorated by the knowledge that my equipment was completely safe and that I was fully trained in how to use it. Yeah, I literally had proof in front of me that unless there was some kind of like freak metal fatigue in my carabiner, that there was absolutely no way I was going to fall off and die. And I got the chance to test this at, you know, progressively higher heights until I was absolutely confident that even if I messed up, there was virtually no way that, you know, I was going to die. And actually, once you've kind of absorbed those kind of facts, it gives you an awful lot more room to be in the moment and, again, concentrate on what you're doing. You know, sometimes I feel quite sad when I look back and I think of all the hours that I've spent worrying, being anxious, being frightened, being fearful, or not doing things because I was fearful. You know, if you can stick with the facts and not let yourself catastrophize and let your thoughts run away at a million miles an hour until, you know, you're imagining the end of the entire universe just because you didn't answer a phone call. If you can stop all that, then it does give you room to just enjoy life. And I realize it's easier said than done. It's a process. It's ongoing. You know, for some of us, I suspect it's going to be a lifelong journey to try and get these kind of thoughts in check. But even if you can just do it a little bit, even if you can just claw back 5% of the time you would have spent worrying or frightened, then that's, you know, that's a lot of time that you can just spend reflecting on the good bits of your life. And the last thing that's really stuck with me actually is the importance of finding people and places where you can be yourself, really. I think for a lot of people, sometimes we find these communities online and they're great. They're amazing sources of support. But I think if you get the opportunity to kind of take some of these relationships into the real world, or if you get the chance to go places where you can meet your kindred spirits, find your tribe, then that's really precious. And I think that kind of connection is incredibly affirmative and sustaining. I think to know that there are other people out there that are like you, and you know, it doesn't matter if that's because you follow the same football team or the same band, or because you like the same kind of needlecraft, or you play a sport, whatever it is, if you can find people that get you, then their company is absolutely gold. And yeah, if you can, even if it means just once a year, you're going away for a weekend and meeting up with these people, I promise you, it's very, very, very positive, and it will make you feel good about yourself. So, that brings us to the end this week. This has been a bit of a ramble about fear and worry and anxiety and doing new things. But I felt it was really important to just sort of talk about some of the things that have worked for me really this year. You know, I'm not taking any of this for granted, because last year was just such a difficult year. And I felt I had nothing. So everything I've achieved this year feels incredibly precious. And everything that I've done that I didn't think I could do is a source of great pride to me. So I hope you found this interesting. And I will see you all again soon. Bye-bye. That's all from me and my brain for now. You can find all the information about this episode and any links and resources mentioned over on the show notes page at emmalloyd.co. Thanks for listening, and if you enjoyed the show, please make sure that you're subscribed. If you'd like to leave a review on iTunes, it'll help more people find the podcast. Bye for now. See you next time.